Friday, and Sarah's here again for Newbie Questions.
Go and check that out. It's absolutely hysterical. He's very talented. Very talented.
As a musician.
As a musician.
He's a good bike rider too. Each year now, because of that edition, I will look at the weather forecast in Roubaix for the week leading up to it, and I'll pray for rain. Because if it's rain, it's a slip and slide fest.
Yeah. I was riding up front with them for a little while, and I so wanted to take my camera out and take a selfie, a video selfie riding. And I was just like, oh, I cannot be the girl that takes down Pogacar.
Vingegaard Center.
She's a hit man.
Before we get into today's episode, I have some exciting news to share with you. It's been a game changer recently for me, making a marked difference in my performance, especially when it comes to my sleep. Let me introduce you to Pillar. Pillar is a company that's on a mission to fuse pharmaceutical precision with sports supplementation for athletes just like us. Okay, so we're all familiar with electrolytes and carbohydrates in our race preparation, but Pillar's taking a different route. It's focusing on something called micronutrition. It ensures you're ready to perform even before you hit the start line. It's all about promoting a good night's sleep. It's facilitating effective recovery and replenishing those critical micronutrients so you can perform at your best. Over the past month, I've been incorporating Pillar's triple magnesium into my routine. Every night, I take it 30 minutes before bed, and I've seen a remarkable improvement in my sleep quality. You'll know that I'm back using a Whoop device tracking my sleep, and the results of that improvement are there in black and white. I've had about a 10% bump in my restorative sleep since I started taking Pillar. I'm waking up feeling refreshed every morning, ready to attack work, podcast, training, and just the next day in general. But don't just take my word for this. Try it and let the data on your fitness tracker tell you the story. So if you're ready to elevate your performance and your sleep quality, why not give Pillar a try? Head over to pillarperformance.shop and use the code ROADMAN on your local website for 15% off your first order. Or for US listeners, head over to thefeed.com/pillar and use the code ROADMAN for the same 15% off your first order. The details of both of these are in today's show notes. Now let's get into the show. Sarah, welcome back.
Good to be back. Should we crack straight into the questions?
No chit chat, straight in, no kissing.
We're chomping at the bit here. Anthony, who is the athlete, cyclist, or any other sport that is worth a follow on social media?
Cyclist or any other sport? Now, I'm going to stay with cyclists because I'm not going to get into that quagmire. I suppose it depends what you're looking for.
Yeah, if you're looking for super motivational stuff, if you want to look at somebody's lifestyle, like if you want pictures of their watches that cost 300 grand, there's plenty of those out there.
Hook Moonan is probably Hook Moonan for all of that.
Hook Moonan for her bib shorts and sports bra combos and very dramatic flick of the hair. I absolutely love Hook Moonan. I think it's astonishing the amount of creeps that comment on her social media posts. It's quite frightening, actually. Quite frightening.
My actual account is, I actually don't follow Hook Moonan, but my account is i_simp_AlaPhilippe. That's my account. It's just absolutely hilarious. They have a post there today about UCI teams without aero ear covers are being forced to cut off their ears to stay competitive. It's absolutely brilliant.
It's really funny.
Picture a wout for an art with no ears.
Simp. Yeah, no, I don't think I simp. For anybody who's over the age of 35 and doesn't know what a simp means, it means basically you're in love with them. I simp AlaPhilippe big time. Oh, he's like the housewife's favorite. I definitely follow him on
social media.
So
who's your must follows?
My must follow is Tadej Pogačar because his accounts are absolutely hysterical. He's so funny. He documents absolutely everything.
Is this just because you met him last week?
I met him last
week. Sarah and Pogačar are friends now.
We'll put the photo up. I wish. He was so nice. Do you know what? Everyone always talks about what a legend he is, how sweet he is, how professional he is. And I was over there meeting him with a load of other journalists. And he probably is the last place he wants to be. He probably wants to be out riding his bike, but he was still so friendly, had time for everybody, had time for all our questions, jumped in a couple of photos with everyone. So yeah, Pagaccia.
Did you come away with an eating disorder? That's why I'd be worried about meeting him.
No. Do you know what? He is lean. That is for sure. He is, I can confirm, Pagaccia is lean. Very, very lean. Okay, the other person that, do you know that Cristiano Ronaldo, if you're looking for somebody, he has the most amount of followers on Instagram as an individual.
On the entire platform?
Yeah, over 618 million followers. Like, that's insane. I think he is definitely worth a follow. Ronaldo, we love him. He's an insane athlete. All of the stuff is very highly curated, though. It's not like the Pagaccia stuff where it's a bit more raw, a bit funnier. But I think Cristiano Ronaldo is a really good one to check out. And a really amazing social to follow is Lucy Charles. She's the world champ at the moment of the Ironman distance triathlon, I'm going to say. Her content is brilliant. I don't know how she does it.
Her YouTube's very good.
Her YouTube's amazing. She documents absolutely everything that she does. And she's just the darling of triathlon, I think, at the moment. Everyone loves her. She just seems like a sweetheart.
So I'm going to throw in a curveball. Cyrus Monk.
Oh, yes.
We were watching his videos before the start, but they have one GCN Plus, obviously closed down, probably a couple of months ago at this stage. And side note, it's such a nightmare watching cycling at the moment. I have Discovery Plus. It's shocking.
Yeah, it's hard to find anything on it. GCN Plus, we were so spoiled. It was amazing. And that's really been trending on cycling Twitter at the moment. Like, where am I going to watch racing? I'm in the States. A VPN won't work. Discovery Plus won't work for me. So it's such a shame that GCN Plus...
So Cyrus wrote a song about this. Mm. So Cyrus is worth a follow. I follow him over on Twitter and he's hilarious. He's probably on Instagram as well. He rides for Q36.5. Interesting fact on that one. I met the founder of Q36.5, not the team, the brand, at Roller last year. And he was one of the founders or co-founders of ASOS. Then he sold ASOS, had a non-compete clause, so he couldn't get involved in cycling apparel. That expired and then he went and founded Q36.5, which is really nice.
It's really
custom
nice.
Kit.
Yeah, that is really, really nice. And the thing that Cyrus is doing, it kind of kicked off, I feel like it was during COVID and lockdowns, where he essentially makes instruments out of everything. I don't know where...
Panadol packet.
At least it's not Tramadol.
More fitting to be like Stilnox sleeping tablets or something for a pro cyclist.
Go and check that out. It's absolutely hysterical. He's very talented. Very talented.
As a musician. He's a good bike rider too.
Okay, next question. This is from Chris B. Anthony, how do I go faster but at a lower heart rate? I'm averaging 160 to 170 for my rides and I can't seem to get this down at all. Oof, welcome to the club, Chris. This is me.
Going too hard. Like you're maybe trying with the wrong group if you're going out with 160, 170. So without this turning into a real nerdy science corner, we have different heart rate bands and in each of those different called zones and in each of those different zones, we get a different physiological adaptation. We want to spend around 80% of our time in around zone 2, which is a much, much lower heart rate than he's talking about here. So the ways to do that, it's regular training as unglamorous as that sounds, that's going to improve your cardiovascular efficiency and it's going to allow your heart to pump more blood per beat, meaning it doesn't have to beat as frequently to get that amount of blood to your working muscles. You could try and focus more on deep sort of rhythmic breathing. That could bring your heart rate down as well and be a little bit more mindful of the effort. Hydration could also be an issue. Last one's just managing your effort on climbs. If you're going super, super hard up climbs, remember when we started, you used to think you had to like accelerate, surge. Like Sarah ride the first 50 meters of climb at 500 watts and then like be pushing our bike like 50 meters later.
You'd be pushing me on the bike up the rest of it. I think the heart rate thing is interesting because it's certainly something have a very high heart rate, Chris. And that's what I kind of focused on this winter was going out and doing those really long, very slow rides. You have to do them on your own because you don't want to feel pressure to keep up with somebody, stay with someone's wheel, chat, even talking. So I would say...
See, if you can't talk, actually, that's a good one.
Yeah.
Because if you can't talk...
You're in the wrong zone.
You're in the wrong zone. You're typically in zone 3 or above. And that's like a rate of perceived exertion of 7 or above. You want to be in a more 5 to 6 rate of perceived exertion where you can hold a normal conversation. So if you're going out with a friend and you can't hold that normal conversation with them, you're probably out of zone too.
Yeah, if you're listening to Spotify and you can't sing along with the song, you're definitely in the wrong zone there. The other thing I will say as well, Chris, is like, you have to keep your ego in check here when you're training for heart rate, because you are going to be passed by the old deers in their heavy bikes with the basket on the front and maybe the dog in the basket.
A lad rollerblading.
Like, you are going to get passed out and you're going to think in your head, I could smoke this person, but you have to kind of hold it back. And the other observation I have from doing this low heart rate training for the last couple of months is, it's very nice, because when you are sticking to 110, 120 beats per minute, you're not going through traffic going, oh, I got to get that green light, I got to get around that car, I got to get to the top of this hill really, really quickly. Your whole mindset kind of changes and it's a much more relaxing kind of time on the bike, very little aggro. And yeah, I really, really enjoy it.
Dress warm,
absolutely. Yeah, if you think, okay, I've got enough layers on, put on another couple of layers. But yeah, best of luck with that, Chris.
We've been so happy to have Silke on board as one of our sponsors this year. For those of you who might not know, Silke offer the best in the game bike accessories like tools, pumps, plus all your everyday bike maintenance kit like chain wax and sealant. They have a true commitment to creating products that are the highest quality and even manage to make everyday bike accessories, well, beautiful. I have their foot pump here, and instead of shoving it in the press after I'm finished using it, it sits with pride of place in the studio. It's a work of art. It's so cool. So if you want to spoil yourself or another cyclist in your life this Christmas, they have so many great gift ideas. And as a Roadman listener, you get a 13% discount on all Silke products. Just use the code ROADMAN13 at checkout. Not only does this get you a fantastic deal, but it also lets Silke know that sponsoring this podcast is valuable. Whether you're shopping for a gift or treating yourself, Silke has something for every cyclist who hates throwaway culture and loves quality. So check them out and don't forget to use the code ROADMAN13 for 13% off your purchase. The code and link are in the show notes below.
Okay, next question, and this is from Dee.
Hola,
Dee. Hi, Sarah. Hope you're well. I'm hoping that you'll include this in next week's newbie questions. But Anthony, I just wanted to know what you guys think of the Paris-Roubaix event, or if you've ever completed it or heard anything about it. My friend is convincing me to sign up for the hardest route, 145 kilometers, but I'm very nervous. It looks very hard. Torture, to be honest. I don't think they call it the Hell of the North for nothing. Now, I've been road cycling for 10 years and racing for a few of those, but all just road. I've never cycled on cobbles or done much gravel or mountain biking. My question is, what is it like to ride on cobbles? And can any regular road racer tackle this? Or do you think we're mad? Thanks.
If she's been riding for that long, she should be fine on it. It's a road event. You don't need a gravel bike. You don't need a mountain bike, definitely, although it would make your life a lot easier, but be out there all day.
Yeah.
I don't see it as an event that I would love to go and do as an amateur. Obviously, I was never good enough to go and do that as a pro. And if I was, it just looks like aptly named hell. Like, it's miserable. It's dangerous. You see some of the crashes. I had Mitch Docker on the podcast, and he was talking about his crash going into Carrefour de l'Abra, because they go in so fast for position into Carrefour de l'Abra, the key cobble section, that if you go down, it's catastrophic. It's not much fun riding on cobbles, but this is one of the oldest races on the calendar. They've been riding it since 1896. And we've had some additions that have been, frankly, almost hilarious. 2002, it was wet. And I don't know how many times Hincapie crashed. He was on his arse more than... on his bike. Johan Museu from that Doma Farmer Freights, a good solid doping team, took out the win that day. And each year now, because of that addition, I will look at the weather forecast in Roubaix for the week leading up to it, and I'll pray for rain. Because if it's rain, it's a slip and slide fest. Yeah. But I'd worry about that as signing up as an amateur, because it's at a time of year where it's possible to get rain. And if you went into the amateur event and you got a wet day on it, it's going to be so, so dangerous. I think even if it's dry, it's going to be miserable and not that enjoyable. You're going to be jolted for the whole thing. I just think, maybe Hoofroute, Flanders, one of those is a more enjoyable event.
I think that you should do this. Okay, so I have this theory that men always overestimate themselves and women underestimate themselves.
You go and do it then, Sarah.
Yeah, I to be honest, I would like to try it. Now, I would be like Dee, I'd be a little bit apprehensive about it. I mean, bike handling skills. And when you go to Roubaix, those cobbles, it's not like a nice paved road where it's like beautifully spread out. These cobbles are deep. There's a lot of space between each cobble. There's definitely the width of a tire, you know, between that you can get kind of caught up on. So I can see it just being, you know,
just not that much fun. That's why it's like, what are you looking for out of this? Are you looking for just an epic challenge?
Yeah, but it like, looks, it sounds like that to me.
What does an epic challenge, what is an epic challenge then? Are you looking physically to be exhausted, or are you looking actually to be in pain at the end of it? I think you're going to be in pain at the end of this.
If you look at when the women raced it last year, they came in and their hands were all bleeding. And I know that happens in the men's peloton as well. But okay, let's say Dee wants to go for this, okay? She is determined. Her friend has convinced her. They've had a couple of glasses of wine and they're signed off. They paid their money.
All good decisions are made. A cup of
exactly.
glass of wine.
They paid their money and this is happening for Dee. Give her some advice around, does she tackle these cobbles with a bit of speed? Does she take her time? Like, does also, what about tire pressure the night before? Should she maybe use a gravel bike?
No, I don't think you need a gravel bike. All the road bikes now have slightly wider. They're able to take 28 tires. If you can use like a 28 tire pressure, I don't know, on her, very much dependent on her weight and the conditions of, for me, I'd probably ride something around 65 PSI. Mm. But I think Boone and Road years ago, they asked him on the start line why he wasn't wearing gloves. And he said, because it's gangster. I think wear gloves. You're not a gangster, Dee. You're not a Tom Boonan.
Well, we don't know that Dee isn't a gangster. If she gets through Paris-Roubaix,
if she's sending questions, it's a newbie question. She's not a gangster.
She's been riding her bike for 10 years and doing some racing. I think Dee can absolutely do this. I would also say make sure that you have, look, you know your bike, Dee, a good bike fit, a saddle, a good chamois, all of that kind of stuff. Just take care of those little details and you'll get through this. And Dee, I can't wait to hear back from you when you complete this. And
we
can just say, we can be, you know what, Anthony, stick it. Okay, next question. Hey, Anthony and Sarah, I have a question about the group ride. Can you explain how a pace line works? This is hard because I tried to explain this when I was leading a kind of a beginner's ride during the summer. Shout out to all the dashers. Trying to explain to them how to do a proper pace line. What I did was I actually did it before we set off on the bike.
And you're had, like Alex Ferguson, you got the chalkboard out.
Yeah, no. I had everyone stand like in pairs and then
Jeez,
move
so glad
up.
I wasn't there.
Oh my God, they hated me at the end. They were like, that bitch is so bossy. But it was like a good way to teach people how to do a pace line while you weren't on the move. Just like how to move properly.
So I'm a little bit confused by the question. So a pace line is a single line.
Where
one person, so if you've seen a team time trial, so if you've six people in formation, it's six people in a single line. So I might take, you know, a 30-second turn on the front, I move slightly to the right, and the person in second will come up and now they're the tip of the spear, and I slide all the way back into last position. The person on the front rides for 30 seconds, moves slightly to the right, depending on the direction of the winds, he may move slightly to the left. And then the person in the second wheel becomes the tip of the spear, which propels it forward. You don't really do a pace line on a Saturday group spin. You have up and over.
That's what I kind of thought this question was about, a pace line up and over.
Yeah, so you have a little bit of up and over on that, where you have two lines, and one is a progression line and one is a descending line. So if we're going to use an example, say the person on the right-hand side is moving forward in the progression line. So maybe you'll ride together for a minute or two on the front, and the person on the right will ride past the person on the left and then pull across into the left, and the person behind on the right hand side that was in position two now comes up to position one. Really difficult verbally to explain that. Graphically, it makes much more sense. But you really don't need to figure this out. Like, unless it's a group of people who are total newbies all coming together, in the case that you went to a spin where it's all newbies, that's very rare. If you go to any cycling club, this has been going on, what we say Paris-Roubaix is like 1890, they know how to ride in groups since then.
Yeah.
And that's the cool thing about groups. You go in there and there's somebody that's a month like of experience, there's somebody that's a year of experience, somebody that's 10 years of experience. And in our group ride, somebody that's, you know, Sean Lally Senior, it's because he got 50, 60 years of experience. He's 83 years old and he rides with us every weekend. And you learn things from these guys all the time. And that's the beauty of the group ride environments, that you're always learning. So you don't have to listen to stuff like this.
Yeah, we have people come on our group ride and the line is moving and they're like, oh, what do I do? You know, kind of like, and we love that. Like, ask questions. Don't be embarrassed by not knowing this stuff.
And it's normally the answer is just follow that.
Just follow that.
Yeah, because it's easier to be a part of it than to explain it in an abstract.
And it's so much fun riding in a group like that when it's really smooth and the line is moving up, apart from when you're on the front and you're dying. Talking about the original pace line, Anthony, and do you remember when we were out training in Mallorca and you were trying to teach me how to do...
I was trying to get you right through.
Oh my God, that is really, really hard. So you just have to whack it to get in front. Whack it while you're on the front. Whack it when you drop back. There's no let up at all. So that's zero crack. Okay, next question. Hey, Anthony, I recently had a crash out riding when I was descending and myself and a car collided awkwardly. One broken collarbone later, but the recovery physically wasn't as bad as this underlying fear I have of it happening again. How can I recover mentally from this and get back on the bike and perhaps get back to descending with confidence like before?
It is hard. You've had a couple of spills as well. Did they affect you afterwards?
Yeah, they stay with you for sure. And you're a lot more nervous. You stay a little bit further back from the wheel in front of you, where I'm certainly, when I first started cycling, Anthony and I went away and I was descending. I was following his wheel. I was doing everything.
Descending like somebody who never tastes the tarmac,
exactly,
we call it.
Exactly. Yeah. Reckless, I would say. But after a couple of spills, like when we were in Mallorca the last time, you said to me, you're like, oh, since you've gotten better on the bike, you know, or gotten more experienced on the bike, your descending has become poorer.
Start to have an awareness of what could go wrong.
You do. You're like, whoa, this could go really, really wrong. I really like my teeth and, you know, I don't want to crash here. So you become a little bit more cautious. So yeah, of course, this is actually a question that we get in now and again about how to recover mentally from crashes. So
I think the type of crash depends how long it stays with you. If you have a big bunch crash and you're in a Sunday race and there's 100 people, someone touches a wheel and goes down like Skittles, they typically don't stay with you that long because there's not much you could do to prevent that. You know, maybe someone will argue your position could have been better, but it's largely out of your control. I find the ones that will stay with you longer are the ones that are in your control, where you slid out because you didn't moderate your speed or you took the wrong angle going into a corner. But I think in general, there's a four-step process for getting over these type of crashes. And the first part of it, it sounds a little bit cliche or corny, but bike riders, we have a tendency to just dust it down and on to the next. And the first part of the four-step process, it's actually allow yourself to acknowledge that you did crash and feel the emotions that go with that and feel, okay, I actually am a bit scared to get back on the bike. And so many people gloss over that. And I think once you've done that, then it's a case of getting back in. I'd say step two is like gradual exposure. If you've had a crash at 60 kilometers an hour on a technical descent, don't go straight back into doing that again. Can you go, you know, your local hill, which is a much shallower descent that's not technical, build up the speed on that until you get back to a point and adding a little bit on each time you go out. And then once you've done that, as you're doing it, I don't think these steps are like sequential, but they can happen all at the same time, simultaneously. I think you need to look back and honestly learn and reflect on what's going on. We have someone in our club and the last couple of years has had a lot of crashes over and over again. And if you were to, in the cold light of day, analyze these, maybe you'd say, somebody, there's a pattern here that if we step back and we acknowledged that there's an underlying problem, you could go and address that problem. But when you just onto the next. And then I think the last part of the four-step process is, like Dave Brailsford will say, control the controllables. Like, was your crash, which I've had many of them, where I slid out, that could be a tire issue. Are you using the right tires for the conditions? Or are you listening to, you know, your social media influencer? Are you getting Puck Moonan's tire suggestions? Or are you actually going to trusted, experienced sources that are riding the same environment as you, to have the same, you know, geographical challenges, the same type of tarmac? So tire choice, are you using the right brakes, general safety equipment? Control your stuff. After you've controlled your controllable, I think you just need to, as you'd say, Jesus take the wheel.
I have certainly done that in some gravel races where I've been in places that I probably shouldn't been going at certain speeds I shouldn't have been. I'm just like, Anthony's like, how'd you get through that? And I'm like, oh, I just said, you know what? Jesus, take the wheel here. Yeah,
it's not a good philosophy.
Any of the crashes that I've had, when I've looked back on them, there has been massive gaping holes in my bike handling ability. I was going too fast, my equipment. So yeah, take a little while and like reflect on what went wrong. Don't just, as Anthony says, back on the saddle straight away.
One of your takeaways from coming home from UAE last week seems to be you're going to get into this virtual race and you're getting a bit money hungry. You're getting into virtual racing a bit more.
Yeah. So if anyone follows me on Twitter, you'll have seen that I was in Abu Dhabi during the week, and that's where I met Pagacha and got to ride around.
Pagacha met you.
Sure. I was saying that I was riding up front with them for a little while, and I so wanted to take my camera out and take a video selfie riding. And I was just like, oh, I cannot be the girl that takes down Pagacha.
Vindegaard Center.
She's a hitman. But yeah, so it was amazing. I was over there with my Whoosh and learning all about the platform and more about what they do and how they're trying to encourage this kind of online racing. Now, anyone who comes on the Tuesday night time trial that I host, that is brilliant, but there's so much more to the platform. And I wasn't really aware of the amount of racing and the amount of prize money.
One of my friends won $4,500 a few weeks ago racing
for one race.
Platform for one race. I think he got, it only pays, I think, I can't remember if it pays 3 deep or 5 deep. I think he got third and he got $4,500. And he's been a continental level pro for a long time. And he said that's his biggest single payday ever. 1 hour of work, $4,500.
And you know what? Just because he's ex-pro, don't let that put you off. Because the beauty about the My Whoosh Racing is I'm going to do it. So essentially, it's basically categorized with your watts per kilo. So there is amazing prize money, even if you're at 2 watts per kilo, if you're
which
in that category,
which I am.
There is amazing prize money in there for those categories. So like anybody can race. And in fact, as I said, the prize money is insane, but they can't give away the monthly allotment prize money for women. So any women out there who kind of want to make an extra few bob, who are like, I want to do a little bit of racing, dip my toe in this, have a little look on My Whoosh. There is like a verification system that you have to go through when you race. So you will have to send them a video of you weighing yourself. This is just to make sure that people aren't cheating about their weight, you know, their watts per kilo.
Don't take that video and put it on like OnlyFans.
No. This is all, no, nobody gets to see that. No one gets to see that. This is all done by some algorithm and some team over there, but it's not publicly published.
There's no shaming you.
There's no shaming.
I met all these people
when I was over there, and I'm like, oh, do I really want to send them my actual weight, which I'm really in denial about myself as well.
Since me and Pagacha.
Yes. Yeah, so there's a little bit of a verification, but they've made it very, very streamlined, and they've actually changed the verification process in the last couple of weeks. Now, with the racers, you can't go into a sauna, sweat your ass off like a boxer, you know, half an hour before your weigh, and then that will totally skew your watts per kilo as well. They are now starting to weigh people. You have to weigh and send them this video, you know, 30 minutes after the race.
That's a good idea.
So I think that will kind of weed out a lot of the cheating. It's actually one of the questions that I asked when I was over there is how much cheating goes on.
Loads. Not specifically on this platform. Yeah. Every platform, e-racing is
finding
new ways. Look, we talked about this in a podcast. I think it was the Greg LeMond reaction video, which I'm not sure if it's come out or not yet. But anywhere where there's incentives, Money. You're going to find ways to shortcut those incentives. And 4,500, depending on what part of the world you're in, like you're in the part of the world I'm in, that's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money.
Like, it's a lot of money.
The ingenious ways that people are cheating, I won't go into all of them, give all of you guys ideas out there, but people using hair dryers on their turbo trainers to change the calibration somehow. And loads of weird and wonderful ways that people are trying to cheat the system. But anyway, I am going to really get stuck into racing on My Whoosh, and I'm going to basically have you all follow along, and I'd love to especially see more women jump in as well.
Right, check out Sarah's Twitter account for that. We'll drop the handle in the show notes. Thanks for tuning in, folks. We'll be back again real soon.